Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Welcome in to another edition of the Jayhawk Talk podcast. We got a lot to talk about today, Andrew. We are coming off a KU Duke game. Nice little victory up in Chicago. Champions Classic. We got to talk about this Okafor Jones and Cliff Alexander. We got to talk about some Illinois reactions to some hat pickups. I don't know what you think about that, but should be fun. And then, Andrew, we're going to talk a little KU football. What do you think of that?
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Football.
Almost forgot about that.
I know. It's been a while on the podcast. It wasn't because we forgot about it. Like, we didn't want to talk about it too much because it was kind of depressing, and we thought you guys thought it might be depressing too. But we're going to talk about it this week because we got some good news after that West Virginia game. So let's get right into it, Andrew. How are you feeling today?
Pretty good. I know we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
We may need to expand this podcast into a CNN-style headline news, 24-hour Jayhawk News Network.
Ooh.
Because, like, how are we going to fit all this stuff in? We got Champions Classic. We got recruiting West Virginia. We got the games coming up this week.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to preview Iowa State. We're going to talk a little football preview. We're going to preview Iona basketball game.
Buckle up. That's my best advice.
What's that?
Buckle up.
Yes. Good plan. Well, let's get right into this KU Duke game. Andrew, I was, of course, up there in Chicago for the game. It was a fantastic doubleheader, nice little event the Champions Classic folks put on, especially the doubleheader, the second game, a nice little 94-83 victory for the Hawks. Let's talk about some individual player performances before we get too far. Perry Ellis, I don't know about you, but man, he was a man in that game. 24-9, played 35 minutes. I think a lot of people obviously talked about Wiggins, but without Ellis in the first half, man, we're not in this game. Wiggins, though, came in the end, 22-8 in just 25 minutes of play. Pretty efficient as well. Wayne Selden had 15-6-4 in 37 minutes. And Frank Mason, off the bench, 11 of 12 free throws, 23 minutes of play, added 15 points. Any other stats jump out to you from this game?
Well, I think that it showed that KU kind of played up their strength and that we out-rebounded them 39-24.
Yeah.
And you know, Duke wasn't particularly physical down low, so we were able to, you know, rebound them. There was 53 combined fouls. One thing that kind of gets to me is that Duke shot 51.7% from the field and KU shot 51.6. I mean, I know it's Duke, and I know Jabari Parker was on fire. But if we're going to become a better team, that percentage is going to have to come down. But Bill Self teams always get better defensively, and we were playing against Duke, you know, a high-octane offense this season. So can't be too concerned, but going forward, something to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to say this real quick about Frank Mason. For a while there, we kind of brought back the old Tyshawn go and get fouled offense.
Yes, my favorite.
Which was great, but I mean, it wasn't. It's good to know that we can do that with Frank Mason.
Absolutely.
If we need to. That, you know, you can call the play, Frank, go get fouled.
Go get fouled. And that's the same play that Andrew Wiggins should use a lot and that Wayne Selden should use a lot. I think we ought to use that play all the time this year. But you mentioned the shot percentage, Duke shooting over 50%. I think that's a storyline in this game, not just about, you know, the defensive numbers weren't all that great, but it just goes to show you that Duke played well in this game. Like, this was not a game where, you know, they came out and let KU win. They played well in this game, and we still beat them by 11 points. That was one of the things that really jumped out to me, that this was a really, you know, pretty well-played game. I mean, lots of fouls, sure. Defensive effort wasn't always there, at least, you know, wasn't. The effort was there, but maybe the defense wasn't. But I thought it was just a really good game for KU to win this game and have a play against a Duke team that's really, really, really good and is going to be really good this year. It's going to look like a really good win at the end of the season. Any other storylines we should go through in this game?
I think towards the end of the game and in the second half, definitely, we went to a smaller lineup where we had Nadir and Frank Mason on the floor. And if, you know, we were to have this conversation a week ago saying, is that a possibility of a lineup? We would have probably said no. Like, why would they ever do that? But that lineup was pretty effective. What did you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, having two ball handlers on the court at the same time. And last year, we didn't have one ball handler on the court a lot of the times. So that's a nice feeling to have, you where you have Mason bringing the ball up the court, Nadir playing off the ball. You know, Nadir didn't play all that great a defense. He probably really didn't have like an awesome game altogether, but him being on the court with Mason in that small lineup just seemed to click. And I mean, that's something that we're going to see this year. It's nice to have the depth to play all kinds of lineups, and we can go big. We have two bangers we can put in the game if we need to, and Black and Jamari. We can go skinny. We got Embiid. We got Perry. And you can go small and have Perry play the five and run all over the place. So especially with the big guards we have in Wiggins and Seldon that can guard that three and four position real well against a bigger team. I thought that lineup, self making that adjustment, was really kind of the change the second half.
One thing I want to ask you, when we made our predictions last week, I predicted Kansas and you predicted Duke.
Mm.
I don't mean to berate you or demean you or try to make you feel bad about that, but were you surprised about how well KU played, or what happened with KU that you didn't think would happen? Like, why did we play better than you thought we would?
Honestly, Duke, or I guess here's the thing. There's always been this kind of a storyline with KU where early on, especially with younger teams, they are maybe come out a little sluggish. And then as the year goes on, you know, you hit that Christmas time and they get to get in the gym and things start to click and they get better and better. And by March, they're clicking. You know, the old storyline with like Roy Williams KU teams was that they would just peak too early. You know, that was always kind of what fans would say. Oh, they peaked too early. Well, Bill Self teams just seem to rise throughout the season. And I just thought, you know, this game against a good Duke team, I didn't think we'd be clicking, and I was completely wrong. And I don't even know how to explain it, but I am so jacked for this year because we are going to get better, and we played so well in that game. It's scary, and I think that's why we saw a lot of voters give KU first place votes this week. Something we didn't talk about: KU moved up to number two in the AP poll, number three in the coaches. I think they saw the same thing I did and you did. And man, these guys are freaking good. I just didn't expect it to click that early. And I was wrong.
Absolutely wrong. You were right about the score-ish, but you were wrong about the winner. Let's talk about your player of the game.
Here's the three.
All right, so player of the game, we talked about it a little bit. Got to come down to Perry Ellis and Andrew Wiggins, doesn't it? Both those guys played their butts off in the minutes that they had. Andrew Wiggins probably would have scored more points than Perry had he, you know, played a full game. But I'm going to give it to Perry, my man. Without his effort in the first half, I think it would have been a different game with Wiggins on the bench. What say you?
I'll take Wiggins. He was the ultimate closer in this game, you know, totally showed that when push comes to shove, he's the best player on the floor. And definitely when he went up against Jabari Parker, his scoring, especially in the last 4 or 5 minutes, definitely, you know, pushed that lead out, gave us the win. I'll give it to Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, I don't think there's a wrong answer there. Both those guys played terrific basketball, definitely a big part of the game. What about your not player of the game? All right, who's your not player of the game? I'm going to give you the first shot.
Okay, I think it's going to be Tarik Black. I think he's got a breakout game coming. He's going to get this all figured out, but he got into early foul trouble, only played 6 minutes, 3 fouls, no points. If we're going to be effective, especially in the post, he's got to have more minutes. And I'm not saying he's got to play 30. I'm not even saying he's got to play 20, but he's got to be playing more than six and stay out of foul trouble, especially early. He can give fouls. We expect him to do that, but not, you know, to the point where he takes himself out of the game.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's got to go with Black this game. But I do agree. I think he's going to be a big part of this team going forward. I think the question is, though, will he end up losing that starting role at some point this season? Something certainly to keep an eye on. Nadir Tharp was another candidate, but you know he didn't really screw up too much. His defense was a little suspect at times, but you know I don't think he deserves it. And then kind of an interesting game for Andrew White and Brandon Green. Really weren't on the court much. We talked about how they went small and to match up with Duke. And so I think we'll see more from those guys going forward. But I agree with Tariq Black. One thing we forgot to do in some other podcasts, one of our favorite segments from last year, our Jared Haas Floor Burns Player of the Game.
You cannot hope or wish good things to happen. You go make them happen because we are in attack mode for the entire 40 minutes. We do that. Have a fun locker room about 2.5 hours.
All right, so this is the player that doesn't necessarily get all the hype after the game, but was just as responsible for a win. Who is your Jared Haas Floor Burns Player of the Game, Andrew?
We talked about it a little bit, but I'm going to go with Frank Mason. He's not going to show up a lot in the stat book as far as percentage from the field, but, you know, he had 15 points, 11 for 12 from the free throw line in 23 minutes of play. If you were talking about freshman point guards on that night, you weren't talking about the Harrison twins. You were talking about Frank Mason. He was the best freshman point guard out on the floor.
Definitely.
Will he end up being that way in the NBA and down the road? Probably not. But on this specific night, on this Champions Classic night, he was the best freshman point guard out there.
Yeah, he played great. I definitely respect that choice, but I am going to go with Wayne Selden. You know, got basically zero publicity after this game for a really well-played game. 15 points, 6 boards, 4 assists, played 37 minutes. You know, played a lot, actually, you know, 37 minutes, but he just kind of blends in out there. Something that we've talked about a little bit. He just kind of does everything right. He doesn't screw up much and just played a really solid game. And I think he's going to do that a lot this year. And so I'm going to give that to him. Let's talk a little bit about the Champions Classic itself.
Kevin, Andrew, you were there.
I was there. Yeah.
And you've told me a little bit about it, but I'm kind of excited to learn about your journeys here.
Yeah.
There are some exciting things happened there in Chicago.
Well, we talked about it before, how it was kind of going to be interesting because I got this free ticket from a guy I'd never met before, and his family was there, so that was good. It was very normal family, Kentucky family. Everyone's from Kentucky. I get to Chicago. I fly in. First thing I do is meet up with him and his family at a Kentucky bar, so I'm wearing my Kansas gear, and I got a lot of crap for that. But, you know, it was all kind of good fun, good nature. These were the nice Kentucky people that go to the nice bar in Chicago. The other element of Kentucky fans was probably in the parking lot drinking bourbon and ran into a few of those guys inside the stadium. So once we got in, you know, great seats. We sat in the club level. So thanks again to my buddy George for hooking me up with that seat. And anyway, we're sitting there kind of, you know, watching this first game. Kentucky fans, quite a few of them there. But honestly, I think KU fans probably had quite a few more than Kentucky. It's kind of surprising. Anyway, so we're watching this first game, and Kentucky fans didn't have a whole lot to cheer about. I kind of kept my mouth shut because I didn't want to make any enemies. I was just kind of sitting there tweeting and enjoying watching some pretty good basketball. And we're sitting right in front of the suites area. So I turn around and I see a bunch of KU guys in this suite. I'm like, oh, okay, so there's some KU folks here right in the middle of the Kentucky section with me. Well, they had been drinking quite a bit as well and decided to get really kind of boisterous whenever Michigan State would do something well.
Now, really, tell me what boisterous means. Give me details here.
Like stand up and go bonkers for like a basic layup or something like really over the top just to piss off all the Kentucky fans, basically. Like, their goal was to piss off the Kentucky fans, which I can sort of respect a little bit. But I was not about to do it because I didn't want to get murdered. And, you know, I was there with Kentucky fans who gave me a free ticket, so I was going to be, you know, somewhat respectful. But they were not. They were all about getting the Kentucky fans riled up, and they were very successful in that because by the time the KU game came around, the Kentucky fans had lost. They had got more drunk, and whenever Duke would do something well, they too would take the same boisterous attitude and would turn around and basically scream at the KU fans in this suite. And all of this was like, right, like I'm in between it. It's me like sandwiched in between angry, drunk, hick Kentucky fans and some rich Kansas kids in a suite. And so it was kind of awkward, and I was kind of sandwiched in between. So about, I don't know, first half ends, we're in the game, and something happens where Duke made a good play, and they all, you know, stood up and did it again. And I think the Kansas fans might have flipped him off. And out of nowhere, this guy is jumping over me and jumping over the barricade into the suite, like trying to get to this guy, like, I'm going to fight you. And like, drinks are spilling everywhere. People are like yelling security. There's no security to be found because we're on the club level. There's, you know, there's not a whole lot of this kind of stuff that goes on in the club level. So anyway, I'm like trying to like restrain this guy as he's going over the ledge, trying to fight this KU fan who, by the way, had just like backed up. He's like, no, nope, I'm going to stand back and just let this guy go nuts. But yeah, I was so mad at myself, like about, I don't know, 30 seconds after this guy finally got subdued, was I should have just got the hell out of the way, got my little phone out, got a little video up and just showed everybody, because it would have been on Deadspin. It would have been on everywhere because these angry, drunk, crazy Kentucky fans, I'm not going to use any other words, were just going crazy on this guy. And so anyway, the guy spilled my drink. He spilled my popcorn. I was sure to let him know, excuse me, sir, your outrage just made me spill my popcorn and my drink. You owe me for both of them. And he turns around. His friends were like, hey, man, you owe him for that. You owe him for that. And sure enough, the guy just turns around and hands me a $20 bill. He's like, I'm sorry. So,
how much was the popcorn?
I don't know, $5-6. I think I made money on the deal.
That's cheap. That's good.
Yeah, but it was fun, man. It was a great, great two games. Good basketball. Nice to see Kentucky lose. I was cheering for Michigan State. I was sick of hearing this 40-0 talk, and KU just came out and played terrific. So it was a really fun night. Stayed at the Trump, which is kind of cool.
Tell me about your run in with one Grant Hill.
Oh yeah, so we're it took us forever to get a cab out of there. We're walking all over Chicago. Finally get a cab. Finally get back to the hotel, freezing, and this guy wearing a Duke shirt walks by, and we start kind of talking about the game, and I'm ribbing him a little bit. And out of nowhere, Grant Hill walks through. Of course, Grant Hill, NBA many-time all-star and former Duke standout, got into the elevator with us, and we all kind of got silent. And he sees my shirt and says, hey, good game. That was an interesting game. You know, your strength was our weakness in that post play. And next thing you know, I'm talking about college basketball with freaking Grant Hill and the Trump. It was awesome. Definitely a nice nightcap to the night. So pretty great experience. Glad I went, especially since KU got the win. So there you go. But
while you were out of town, were gone for most of the past week. Mm-hmm. You missed out, but I'm sure you saw it. But here in Lawrence, we got to witness the Okafor Jones, Cliff Alexander recruiting megathon last Friday.
Yeah.
Let's get the bad news out of the way first. We did not land the package deal of Okafor and Jones. Sad to see Okafor to go to Duke. He's kind of the prototypical KU big man. He would have been great here. We heard that he was interested in Kansas, and if it wasn't a package deal, this is where he would have ended up. You know, but for Duke, they're getting an inside scorer, an interior guy that they really haven't had since, I'd say, Elton Brand. You know, it's been maybe 10 years since they've had a guy like that. They've had the Plumleys and they've had some other guys, but not an interior scorer to what they're getting. But we did land Cliff Alexander. Cliffmas came early, is what they're saying.
There you go.
So, which led to one of the funnier recruiting choosing of a school ceremonies I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And certainly if we were on the other end of it, we wouldn't be thinking it's funny. But let's hold off on that. You were kind of keeping up with the rumors and rumor central that was going on throughout the day. So let us know what you were hearing just through your little birds that were chirping.
Yeah, I am not an insider at all, but I have friends that are and I would not annoy them, but you know, say, hey, let me know if you're hearing anything. And some stuff I couldn't tweet, some stuff I was. But anyway, it started off, you know, people were talking a lot about Illinois, and then there was some talk about KU gaining steam. And then at the end, DePaul started getting some run, and it was just kind of like, what's this guy doing? And from what it sounds like, he really hadn't made his decision 100%, even up to just that, even that day. And it was interesting to see this one play out. After the fact, there were some questions about whether he was going to sign even in the fall. Some people said he was going to move on to the spring. And so that got a little scary, you know, after the announcement, you know, after announcing for Kansas, some folks were like, well, you know, Self's going to have to continue to recruit this kid because he may not sign till the spring. You and I had talked, I think that Self sent old Jarence Howard on the phone and said, hey, you need to get this kid to sign. You need to get this kid to sign right now. And sure enough, the next morning he faxed his letter of intent in. So we are good to go on that front. But yeah, great news about Cliff.
You know, he's the kind of the perfect guy for our system with this kind of high-low thing we're still running, and reminds a lot of people of Thomas Robinson. I don't think that's entirely fair, but we like to compare people like that, and so I think that that's kind of a closer comparison. You'll see him, you know, work a lot around the basket, but they're saying he's got a bit of a mid-range game too, so maybe that'll be good for us as well. But combined with Kelly Oubre, who is shooting up the rankings, who is 12 in Rivals, 7 in 24/7, and 10 in ESPN, and probably will be higher at the end of the season. We now have, you know, basically two top 10 guys in the class, with the chance of adding more in Miles Turner, Rashad Vaughn, potentially Jaquan Lyle. You know, we missed out on Tyus Jones at point guard, but I think we're okay at that position for the next several years. You know, Frank Mason has shown that he's going to be a good player. We've got two more years of Nadir, I mean, including this season. So it's not a big deal. I think that we're set at that position.
Yeah, and there's some guys in the next class that KU's are, you know, in on early that play point. So, you know, worst case scenario, you know, we might be looking at that position next year's class. But I agree, and I think Frank Mason could really be the real deal, especially, you know, if he's going to get better, and he's been pretty darn good so far. One thing you're going to hear about Cliff Alexander, you're going to hear that word motor. That's the
one of our favorite words.
Yeah, you're going to hear the word, he's got a motor, all the time. And that's what we heard about T-Rob. And I think that's kind of where the comparison comes in a lot. He's got a motor. He's got a nose for the ball. He, you know, he snatches every rebound. You'll hear stuff like that, which is great. I mean, that's a Bill Self guy, big, tough, strong guy. You know, he's going to rebound the ball. And I think he'll be a really good addition. One thing to keep an eye on, though, we've heard that he may be a qualifying risk. He has not qualified yet. Now that he's done with his recruitment and all that stuff, maybe obviously he's going to focus in on that. But there was some talk that he could be a partial qualifier risk in the same vein as like a Josh Selby or Mario or whoever. So we'll see. Hopefully he can get that done and we will see him next year. Let's talk a little bit about the hats. What do you say?
So we're terrible. We have a terrible track record with recruits picking out hats. So when Tyus Jones and Jahlil Okafor are standing there at the podiums, I didn't see any hats. I thought we were fine. But then the Hats came up from behind the podiums. They picked Duke.
That was tricky, yeah.
The Hat curse continues. But
do you know where the Hat curse got started? I actually did some research on this today.
I think from Baron Davis.
Right. And here's I found an old Gary Bedore article from like 1997 or whenever it was when this happened. And Gary was actually still covering KU hoops then. So he had on the table a KU hat, a UCLA hat, a Georgia Tech hat, and a Los Angeles Clippers hat, which is kind of interesting to think about. So he has all four of these hats lined up, and there's an announcer. He's doing this as on a pregame TV show to the Clippers Jazz playoff game. And the announcer actually says, okay, well, we're going to get rid of this Clippers hat because you're not doing that. We're going to get rid of this Georgia Tech hat. You're not doing that. So, Baron, what does it come down to? And he picks up the Kansas hat, acts like he's going to put it on, and then throws it aside. Like, not even what Cliff did. At least Cliff, like, kind of, you know, he kind of just did a little tip of the hat and then grabbed the KU one. Baron Davis threw the KU hat onto the ground and then wore the UCLA hat. And that was the start of the hat curse. But we might have rid ourselves of the hat curse. Okay, so go on.
So I think it took a fake out to get rid of the fake out curse.
Right.
So he's got all four of his hats sitting there. Got DePaul, Illinois, KU, who am I missing? And
Memphis.
That's all. And Memphis. Yeah. We knew he wasn't going to Memphis. Everyone knew that. Okay, so it'd be to his right. I'm sure you've all seen this, but I'm going to describe it anyway. To his right, immediately to the right, is the Illinois hat. And then right next to the Illinois hat, further right, is the KU hat. He said he's going to continue his education at, pause, drum roll, grabs the Illinois hat, brings it up slightly, and then puts it back down, puts on the KU hat. It faked me out. I had a verbal reaction of, or, you know, something derogatory. Not derogatory, but, you know, I was depressed for half a second before he grabbed it. The best part about this whole thing are the reaction videos. Kevin, have you seen the reaction videos?
They are terrific.
So apparently it's a thing in Illinois to film yourself watching recruits make selections. I thought we were, you know, pretty hardcore basketball people, but I haven't seen any KU reaction videos to getting recruits. Maybe just that's just how
maybe
we do it.
They record them and then they don't post them because they're ridiculous.
Yeah. So, and maybe they're not interesting because you don't get this little hat trick fake all the time. So if you haven't seen them, go see the Illinois reaction videos of everyone losing their minds once right. He picks up the Illinois hat. And then once they figure out that he picked KU, it's a sudden drop in emotion.
Yeah, they are awesome. Just YouTube it. Find it if you haven't. I'm sure you've seen them bouncing around Twitter because they are terrific. And the people, the reactions, you know, they just go nuts when they see the little tip of the Illinois hat. But glad that he chose KU. What's your take on this, though? A lot of people really, like, murdered Cliff for this, you know, saying, that's disrespectful. And John Gross put all this time in as a coach, and it's, you know, it's disrespectful of your home state. And Robert Raw, he's a bad kid. But what's your take on this? Just a kid being a kid?
Well, if he's a bad kid, he's our bad kid now. So I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to just chalk it up to swag and say, welcome aboard, son.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not too worried about it, especially if whatever he did removes the hat curse, which is kind of that's the take I have. Whatever he did had to get done to remove the hat curse, then I'm all for it. So anyway, welcome to Kansas, Cliff Alexander. We will be certainly watching to see some of these other guys. Last few names in the class of 2014 yet to fall. You mentioned Miles Turner and Vaughn and potentially Jaquan Lyle. So we will keep an eye on that. What do you say we change course here, Andrew, and talk a little KU football. Are you into that?
I'm into that.
Are you into that?
We haven't done this in a while. We haven't talked about football for weeks.
Yeah.
So we first of all, we'd like to make an apology to anyone who's, you know, been frantically trying to listen to the KU podcast to listen to us talk about losing to Baylor by 100.
Right.
And Texas by even more. I don't even know how much it was, but doesn't matter. We won a Big 12 game after 27 consecutive losses. Kevin, how does it feel?
You know, it feels good. You got to start somewhere. Even if it's against a broke-ass West Virginia team, I think every KU fan will take it.
Let's just get right into it. We won 31-19. You know, they had more first downs. They had more yards. They had fewer penalties. They had a better third down conversion rate. But KU won the turnover battle and time of possession. Sometimes that's all you need. You had some of those good turnovers that really changed the game for us. We won the game in the trenches, you know, and it really wasn't even close. And most importantly, James Sims had the game of his life. You know, this is a good guy, you know, all Big 12 type of guy, but he had 22 carries for 211 yards and 3 touchdowns. What a game for James Sims. It's good to see him. You know, we're not going to make a bowl game. Him as a four-year star is not going to make a bowl game. Feel sorry for him, but this game, you know, he really – really made everybody pay.
Yeah, he did. He was terrific. And I think it was really a product of Cozart running the offense, running that zone read, really spreading the hell out of West Virginia. I mean, that was the one difference in this game. You've seen us, you know, where people say, you know, KU's running the spread offense again. Look at them. You know, they have four receivers. Well, that's not necessarily spread offense. But what we did in this game a lot was you saw receivers go all the way out to the sideline. I mean, they were spread all the way out, really removing, a few people from the box and maybe having a little bit more running room. We saw that work pretty well. So, certainly a great game for Sims, and Cozart had some pretty good rushing numbers as well. You know, the numbers, I guess, for Cozart weren't awesome, but you know what he did, he was a pretty good manager. He didn't really screw up. He did, you know, he ran the zone reads pretty well. He missed a couple reads, but, you know, he'll get better at that. And, you know, he had a couple nice passes as well. So I one thing I wanted to say, you know, I've been a pretty tough critic of Charlie Weiss, especially on the front, you know, actually game day coaching. But I think the way, if this was his master plan for using Montel Cozart this year, you know, ripping the red shirt, getting his feet wet the first game, and then just kind of putting in packages for him the next couple games. And I think everyone was like, man, just go to the quarterback. We don't either play Heaps or play Cozart. And finally, you know, maybe he was thinking this West Virginia game, we're playing for a West Virginia win. And then if we win that one, you know, we're playing for wins the next two games. And if that was his master plan, you know, definitely props to him because he looked a lot more comfortable out there in this game. And, I don't know. It was nice to see him play well and hopefully play well enough the next couple of games to scratch out another win or two.
You know, Kevin, I think we do a fairly good job on this podcast, right? We kind of know a little bit about what we're talking about. We know a little bit.
Like above average.
Right, but I wouldn't say we're experts at this KU sports thing. So I think we follow it pretty closely, and I think for the most part we try to be entertaining. But I wouldn't say we're experts. But for this next segment, I want to talk about something that I think you and I are experts on. Like, I can definitively say 100% that you, Kevin, and me, Andrew, are experts on this subject.
Mm-hmm.
And that subject is tearing down goalposts.
Yes.
And I say we're experts because we lived during the KU glory day field goal tearing down. And I would wager, if someone wants to correct me on this, that we tore down more goalposts in a three-year period than any other school ever has.
Probably, yeah.
And that is when you and I were in school. But we did it for the first time in 7 years after this West Virginia win. Let's talk about this one.
Okay.
There's a lot of people out there saying, and even kind of making fun of KU fans for tearing the school post down. Do you think that was justified? Do you think the students should have done it?
I think anyone saying that needs to stand up and bend over and remove the big, huge stick from their ass, because absolutely they deserve to do it. This was a perfect opportunity. The next KU Big 12 victory was going to tear down the goalposts, and it did not matter. We talked about this in the preview, I think the football preview podcast. Do we tear down the goalposts for the next Big 12 victory? Yes. I don't care who we're playing, how bad they are. This streak is too long, and these fans have waited too long to see a victory. The students, rushing the field, that team out there loved it. I mean, they have been working for this forever. The seniors have been working for this forever. Absolutely. You go on that field and you celebrate with those guys, tear down the goalposts. Absolutely. What say you?
Absolutely.
Yes.
You know my opinion on on this. And I agree with you. The athletic department may say one thing, but really, I would wager what they're really thinking is they're just glad that there's some people excited about the program.
Oh, yeah.
I will say that the execution of it wasn't great.
Okay, you were there. I was not. So I want to hear a little bit more about this.
Let me give you the rundown.
Okay.
So, and we're going to talk about some of these others here in a second. But there's nothing like being in the stands when you kind of feel something is coming. Like you feel like the train is coming. And what I mean by that is people from behind are starting to push forward. You're starting to move down. Everyone's starting to chatter about, are we going to do this? Are we going to do this? Are we going to do this? Right. I think this is happening. And I wasn't in the student section, but I could see that happening, with a couple minutes to go. And, we're out of practice. We used to be the best school in the country at doing this. If they were to have AP rankings regarding student section tearing down goalposts, we would have been the number one team.
Right.
Like, we would have been like the UCLA dynasty basketball years, that many years in a row of being number one, like undefeated. But we were out of practice. So when it ended, there was a pause. It didn't happen immediately. It was well, maybe they're not going to do it. And then one went, and then a couple people went, and they got grabbed by security. And then a couple more went, and then everybody went. And then it was on, and then the security guys just kind of opened the gates and said, don't get hurt. Right. And everybody rushed to the middle of the field, similar to the Georgia Tech game in 2010.
To celebrate with the, with the team.
Just to celebrate with the team. It was kind of a good atmosphere. After that happened, they did the whole singing in the middle. Then you got your, mob mentality. Like, goalpost, goalpost, goalpost. And then everybody went to the goalpost, tore that down. Took it up to Potter Lake and threw it in. So it wasn't the most elegant of goalpost tearing down.
Right.
We've seen some quality, some elite level stuff, but it was still worthy of a good KU goalpost tearing down scenario.
I agree. It was, you mentioned that the little feeling in the stands that, are we going to do this? Are we going to rush the field? And it reminded me, when I was a student at KU, actually at a basketball game, it was the 2003, it was a freshman, and it was the game that KU beat Texas, who was a really good Texas team that year. And that was the game where Nick Collison had 24 points and 23 boards, and Dick Vitale gave him a standing ovation. It was just a huge, huge victory, and everyone in the stands in the student section, you could hear this little kind of murmur going off, like, are we going to rush the court? Are we going to rush the court? And I had gone to so many KU games as a kid. We had season tickets, and I was like, I don't think we rush the court here at KU basketball. And then some seniors in the front were like, hell no, you're not rushing this court. We don't rush the court. And next thing you know, after the game got over, there were 20 or 25 kids that ran out onto the court and, rushed the court, and they got booed. And I remember that really well. Contrast that with KU football, you get that, are we going to rush the field? Are we going to rush the field? Hell yeah, we're going to rush the field, because this is KU football. We just had a monster victory. That is the difference. And definitely had that feeling multiple times at KU football. Should we talk about a few of those?
So if there's any doubt in your mind, KU basketball, no, never. If there's any question in your mind, KU football, absolutely.
Why not?
Okay, I'm just going to run through these that are in my knowledge. I understand that there was some in the Terry Allen era and the Glenn Mason era, but I don't really know much about that. But the first one, and probably the most vivid in my memory, is 2003 versus Missouri.
That was a good one.
That was a dangerous one. That was probably, like, we were ready for it.
Oh yeah.
It was kind of our Big 12 coming out party, like showing like we're gonna be a good team again. That got crazy. I was in the first row of the student section. Nice. And that's the time you'll never forget, like the people pushing up against you in that like everyone's coming down and you're suddenly starting to get pushed up against the chain link fence and you don't have a choice. Nope. You're rushing field. Like you're going.
Yeah, I have some great pictures of that rushing the field. On the Enhanced podcast, I might post a few here. So look down at your phone or iPad if you have any Apple device.
So that was a crazy one. I believe that was a night game even. It was just insane. The next one day was 2004.
That was a day game, wasn't it?
I don't know. Whatever your pictures say. 2004 K-State. This ended the 11-year winless drought against K-State.
That was a night game.
That's worthy of tearing the goalpost down.
Absolutely.
Right?
That's probably the most or the second most worthy we've had in the last 10 years, 12 years.
Okay. The next is 2000. Okay. This starts what I'm calling the trilogy of goalpost tearing down.
Right.
The trilogy. So this is October 29th, 2005 against Missouri. It was homecoming. It was our third straight year of beating Mizzou. We tore that down.
That was a good one. I got the pictures of that too.
1 week later, 2005, November 5th versus Nebraska, we end our 36th year winless drought against Nebraska, and we tore them down that day.
Number one most worthy tearing it down in my lifetime, I think.
You know what? They ran the score up on us so much.
We were
entitled to a little boasting.
Absolutely.
We
should have carried him to Nebraska.
Now,
dropped him off.
The next one, which concludes the trilogy, which is November 26th. So, mind you, this is all within 30 days of each other. Iowa State, November 26th, 2005, when the Hawks become bowl eligible and we tore down the goalposts. That was the weakest in terms
of... Iowa State game? Oh, man.
The Iowa State. Yeah, that was the weakest in terms of people actually doing it. Yeah. And the weakest in terms of, like... justification for doing it.
I remember being in the stands like saying, no, don't do it. We don't rush the field against Iowa State. No.
It kind of felt like after that game, like we should just do it every game.
I know.
Like, That should just be our thing.
Mm-hmm.
Every time.
I remember the administration was like, these cost $15,000 a piece. Every time you do that, you're wasting $30,000. And every student was like, so?
That's actually not a lot for...
I know. That's what I thought. No, it might have been more than that, but I think that's what I remember.
And then 2006, we played K-State, and we just tore down one time against K-State 2006. And I was kind of looking up to see why we did it, and I found that we did it just because.
That was the reason. Yep.
Just because.
It felt right.
And then Georgia Tech, we rushed. This is Turner Gill era. We rushed the field, but no goalposts.
And I thought that might be what they did for this game was, you know, go celebrate with the team on the field, which I would have been fine with. But I don't know. I'm happy they took the goalposts down. Why not? It gives us something to talk about.
Absolutely. So, wait, what's your favorite?
That's tough. Probably that first Missouri game was my favorite because it was the first time I had rushed the field and been involved in the goalpost tearing down. I was not the guy that would get into Potter Lake, though. That was not me because that lake is absolutely disgusting. And anyone that got in that thing, no thanks. So I was not the guy, although I did help carry them out. I'm also not a climber of the goalpost. I'm not that guy either. I was the one that stood in the back and took pictures and was like cheering. I also have a great picture of me and Johnny Beck, kicker for KU, wearing the navy blue KU uniforms. Remember those? So, nice. Yeah, you know, I would go up and talk to the players and take pictures, but I was not a climber or a swimmer, but I respected those that did.
My favorite, I think, was the 2005 Nebraska one.
Yeah.
Which in the trilogy, it would be the Empire Strikes Back of the trilogy.
Right.
And I only say that because a fraternity brother of mine ended up with the goalpost, and then we all carried it up to the fraternity house, and a bunch of Nebraska people were like following us, older folks, and then we were like, "What are these people doing?" And it ended up being a bunch of them, and so we were worried that they were mad at us or something. We didn't really know what was going on, but they just wanted to take a picture with us. So we were all holding the goalposts, and they were all kneeling down in front of us, kind of pointing at it, and they took the picture. And they sent it to the Nebraska Athletic Department.
That's hilarious.
Athletic director saying, "Fire Bill Callahan."
That is a great story. You never told me
so,
that.
So if if there's a reason why Bill Callahan was fired, it was probably a picture that I was in while I was holding up one of the uprights.
That is so funny. You know, the same thing just happened with West Virginia fans taking a picture to send to get Dana Holgorsen fired. I bet that happened as well. Very funny. That's good stuff. Well, you know, we got two more games left. We got Iowa State. We have another streak to potentially break, a very long streak of away games and Big 12 away games. I don't know how long it is, but both of them are long. And you and I had discussed this once. I think the last away game we won, was in 2009. Is that correct? Against some Texas school that I can't remember. Anyway, it's been a long time since we've won an away game, and even longer since we've won a Big 12 away game. So we could break two streaks at once with another victory this Saturday. You know, we got a chance. Iowa State's not very good. We have more Big 12 wins than they do. They are 1-9 and 0-7 in the Big 12. Anyway, yeah, we got a chance. In the last five games, Iowa State's averaging 13 points. They're not a crazy offense, which is good for KU. We might be able to keep this thing in the teens or 20s, and if we do that, we got a chance. What say you?
I'm going to be watching. They're keeping me interested. You know, and really, and that's kind of one of the disappointing things about the past couple of years is that the Big 12 hasn't been very good, and even though the Big 12 hasn't been very good, we've been even worse. So right. I think we've got to take advantage of. You know, Iowa State's not necessarily a premier player, but they're usually a lot better than they are. So I think we got to take advantage and get a win somewhere.
Yeah. You know, if they play the same way they did against West Virginia, we got a shot. And that's not to say we played awesome against West Virginia. We played well. You know, the offensive line played probably its best game of the year. Defensive line was pretty good. And our defense as a whole was good. We got a couple turnovers, but we have a chance to play even better on the offensive side of the ball. And you know, if they put it together, Cozart comes out and has another good game. We got a decent shot in this game. I have not seen the line yet, but I expect Iowa State to be favored by just a handful, maybe. I mean, what, 3 or 4 points? What would you think?
You know, that's tough. I think that they're going to give Iowa State the favorite there just because they're at home, but I don't think that means anything against, you know, two teams like this. So right. I would, if you're going to Vegas, I would say KU may be an okay bet.
I'm not going to Vegas. Just got back from Vegas. I'm done with Vegas for a while. But okay. So what's your prediction? Let's hear some numbers for this game.
I'm going to go with KU 24, Iowa State 10.
Oh, wow.
I'm just saying, when you tear down a goalpost, momentum.
You get jacked up for these goalposts.
It's the goalposts that set up the Orange Bowl. Like, we would not have the Orange Bowl without that 2005 season of lots of goalposts.
So is this the start of another Orange Bowl run? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes.
All right. I'm in. I'm going to take, you know, I'll take Kansas too. Why not? I will take Kansas. I just looked up the line, by the way. Iowa State's favored by 6. I will take KU 21, Iowa State 17. Let's do it. Let's see another victory. You know, this sets up either way, what, you know, regardless of what happens, Andrew, this sets up a bowl game for KU. I like to call it the Kansas Bowl, which will be taking place in 2 weeks against K-State. It will be our bowl game. I mean, this will play, you know, play out as if it is our bowl game. We thought the same thing last year versus Iowa State. Remember that game where, you know, we were only like a 1-point dog and everyone thought it was going to be a, you know, KU victory to send the seniors out, and we got beat by like 150 points. Hopefully that doesn't happen against K-State, but we will see. So that it sets up the Kansas Bowl in 2 weeks. There's a chance, Andrew, that we go 3-0 on the way out here, and there's a lot of momentum for next year. I doubt it will happen, but another Big 12 victory this year, and I will certainly feel a lot better about this game, about this team and Charlie Weiss. Let's preview the Iona Gaels. What do you know about Iona?
They are the pride of the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference. You know, they're 1-1 on the season with a loss to Cleveland State and a win against Wofford. Last year they went 20-14. They made it to the NCAA tournament for the second straight year. You know, they're kind of an experienced group. They have three starting seniors and two starting juniors. They did lose one of the best names in college basketball from last year, Lamont Momo Jones.
Yes.
He averaged 23 points per game last year. You know, they're projected to win, at least by ESPN anyway, to win the MAAC again. Yeah, it's not the MAAC, it's the MAAC again this year. You know, it's good that Bill Self likes to play these guys early who, yes, they're from small conferences, but they're the types of teams you'll see in the tournament. You know, teams that have a high likelihood of winning their conference. And I think that's, you know, instead of playing scrubs, you know, you kick it up just a little bit and play somebody better, somebody who's going to be competitive. And most importantly, somebody who knows how to win, who's going to get some wins against other teams.
Absolutely. And, you know, you look at a team like Iona, it's like, oh, it's Iona. But this is an RPI builder. I mean, these games are actually decent for your RPI because they're going to go on and win the MAAC, like we discussed. And next thing you know, that win is actually somewhat of a, you know, a decent win on your schedule for the computers anyway, even though it doesn't look like it. What's your prediction for this game tomorrow night?
Kansas 91, Iona 69.
I'm going to go Kansas 96, Iona 64. There you go. You know, we got to tell you, we are very thankful to our friends at Johnny's Taverns for sponsoring the Jayhawk Talk podcast. Please continue to go check out the games. They, of course, have Time Warner in every location except for the Ridgeview one. So you can certainly see this Iona game tomorrow night out there, and then the game on Friday as well. They have once again given us a gift card to give away. Today we decided to do a photo caption contest. Look at your phones now if you have the enhanced version, or we'll tweet it out. We had some pretty good photo captions. This, of course, is a picture of I don't know, how would you describe the picture, Andrew? Is it a This is great podcast material when you're talking about a picture.
Well, if you have an iPhone, just look down at your screen and you'll see on the Hans podcast, you'll see the picture. I would describe it as a gentlemanly chest rubbing.
Chest bump. Yeah, you see Nico Roberts in the background and Christian Garrett in the background with big, huge smiles on their face. You see Brandon Green, who really looks kind of, I don't know, kind of constipated, but I think he's just really excited. Bad picture of him. But Tharp and Wiggins are muscling up, and so we had some great captions, and the first to respond after hearing their tweet read on the podcast will get the $30 gift card from Johnny's, and we will certainly do some more of those down the line. Okay, here's the first one. Marshall Plumlee wears cargo jeans. That was a good one. I don't know what cargo jeans are, Andrew, but I really like them, the idea of them, and that is from at KUBC3. I did have a couple other good ones here. What from at Luke Stenzel, Where's the cereal bowl at? This, of course, is the Rio Adams reference that one of our favorites. This one might be the best one. This is from at Trays for Days. Also points for your Twitter handle. Brandon Green, pictured far right, suffering from wig indigestion after ceiling dunk. I really like the idea of wig indigestion. What are your thoughts on that being a thing?
I think it speaks better than it reads, but I still like it.
It's kind of hard to read. Here's another good one from Jayhawks Cards Fan 5. Where is Jeff Goodman sitting? This is Wiggins looking around. Of course, Jeff Goodman's been outspoken on Wiggins not being as good as everyone thinks he is, so that's pretty good. And then our last one here, at KU Memes, a decent follow on Twitter, says, cock-a-doodle do work, from Nadir. You kind of liked that one. I didn't really get it, but you just like to hear the words do work. So
do work, Kevin.
I assume that was why. Well, thanks for everyone that responded, and hopefully one of you guys will respond and get your gift card. And check out Johnny's for the games. We will be doing, Andrew, a live podcast from Johnny's here in the next few weeks sometime. Pretty exciting, so we'll have you guys come out for that. If you're interested, there will be some Johnny's specials, drink specials, food specials. For anyone that mentions Jayhawk Talk, we'll be doing some watch parties and stuff like that going forward. So it's going to be a fun year on the podcast with Johnny's. Anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here?
We're really going to need to set up this 24-hour news network.
Yeah.
Just to keep up with all these hat ceremonies, with all these, you know, we should have one of those top 10 countdown, you know, like NFL Network, like top 10 field goal posts tearing down. Like I could literally fill an hour.
Yeah, you could.
You just get people to come back and tell their stories about why, like justifying the Iowa State one.
Yeah, that'd be tough to do. I still don't.
Yeah.
To this day, that was like the worst one.
Somebody out there can justify it. But
yeah,
it was that man is not me.
It was probably the guy like you that was in the front row that was like, you know what? I'm going to lead the charge. It's going to be me or Nova, or just me out there or everyone out there. I'm going to jump this fence, and if everyone follows me, then awesome. That's how I think it went down.
That's probably how it went down. But just so you know, if anybody out there wants to give us some money to start this television network, we're all about it.
Yeah, we'll get a Kickstart campaign going here pretty quick. All right, well, let's get out of here, Andrew. Thanks again to all that have listened. Please subscribe on iTunes. Be sure to leave us a comment on iTunes and rate us as many stars as you think we are worth. Your comments and ratings on iTunes is what gives the podcast a bump in iTunes and gets us out there for all to see on iTunes homepage. So please, 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 if you like what you hear, support the show by doing that. Feel free to tweet us at Jayhawk Talk or at Naismith Drive. We will catch you next time later this week in Rock Chalk. Every time we on the court, I tried to tell them that we never coming up short. I tried to tell them that we came here to get the win. I tried to tell them that they should never let us in. They say that we the best, but I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us. They know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel. They know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Uh-huh, yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the fans. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. All the music.
years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing, and look how Bill got us steering, all them tournaments appearing with no team that's interfering, nine times get the cheering with them banners held high and the crowd going wild, night before the final four, you can't even sleep now, yeah we at the peak now, we can't even leap down, March Madness man, we've been waiting weeks now. If you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold them ones high. Shout out to the boosters showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans, even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court. So we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together. But win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man. But one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan.
I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks,
this
baby.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you